Last week, we started a new series on what I shared was one of my absolute favorite books of the Old Testament, the book of Jonah. We always think of Jonah. We obviously associate Jonah with the huge fish, this whale. And I don't know if you guys noticed my alternate titles last week. You know, last week was swimming upstream, or a funny thing happened to me on the way to Tarshish. And so remember the old Bullwinkle TV, you know, cartoons? You remember how there was always an alternate title? You know, a second title? And so, no, you remember? Come on.
I do.
Okay, all right, thanks, Nick. So, anyway, this week we're calling this part of it, Jonah's Story Gets Deep, or It Takes Guts to Follow God. And you'll, come on. Let it process a little bit. It'll kick in. Okay, and so... But maybe, you know, speaking of whale guts, did anybody see that? I mean, this just happened this week. Did you see this in the paper? And you know, it's such a sad, yeah, kind of story. I thought it was very entertaining. I mean, but yeah, I guess there is a big whale died, but I guess they kind of die all the time, don't they, at some point. But I mean, just how mammoth, I mean, a real live sperm whale out on just right, you know, here in the Pacific. I mean, but look how huge those things are. And it's no wonder how, you know, a huge fish like that, a whale, a mammal, underwater sea creature, captures our imagination, you know, and is a big part of why the story of Jonah has been so captivating over the centuries. You know, it's one of our favorite Sunday school stories, but it really has huge implications for all of us as grown-ups on who God is and the role that He calls us to play in expanding His kingdom and bringing His message to those who are far off from Him. And last week we got okay, this just came to mind. You got to put up with me. We got our toes wet with Jonah. I told you I was going to bring as many aquatic phrases as possible into this series. But the reason calling it Go Fish is it's much more than a story about a big fish, but it's about God calling someone to outside of his comfort zone to go bring his message to a people that were not on his list. Nineveh was not on Jonah's list of people that he wanted to share God's goodness and love with. And we talked about that last week, about that's the reason he went in an opposite direction from Nineveh. But Jesus specifically calls us, and when he called his first disciples, who happened to be fishermen, he said, I'm calling you to a slight change in your job description. Instead of catching fish, I'm going to send you out on the adventure of fishing for people. And so that's why we're calling it Go Fish. And I really hope the message really comes through and inspires all of us to want to be part of God's plan to bring His goodness and His love to especially the people that we wouldn't maybe think would ever respond to that. You know, especially Jonah was in for a huge surprise when he saw the big bad guys, the Ninevites, actually did want to follow God. And they responded in a positive way. And you just never know who's going to respond. But we're called to share that message in any way we can, whether through words or actions or just praying for those who are far off from God. So we're going to jump into the second chapter of Jonah 2, which is, as far as a literary genre, one of the more interesting passages in the whole Bible. And it kind of fits into a very specific literary type that is kind of a narrow, well, there's only, you know, a few passages that are kind of like this. And last week, we talked about how the book of Jonah in itself is pretty unique as far as the literary genre of the Old Testament, because and this is something we don't talk enough about in church, but it helps make sense of the Bible as a whole. There's different types of, just go back to high school English, literary genres. Remember when we talked about that when we were in school? In the Bible, all throughout, Old and New Testament, you've got your histories that chronicle actual history. You've got your prophetical books that are the books by the prophets that talk about God speaking to His people and what He's calling them to do. You've got the creation stories. You've got the poetry, the Psalms and Proverbs and Ecclesiastes. These fall into what are called the wisdom writings, and that's kind of their own little pocket of writings. And so each one of those different literary types kind of brings a new way to look at God and to hear from Him. And the way we interpret them, you know, can be different. Some of them we take real literally. Some of them we're invited to take metaphorically. And so sometimes we go, man, am I supposed to believe that a giant fish actually swallowed Jonah? Am I any less of a Christian? And if I just want to take that, you know, most likely, as what we talked about last week, was that probably fits into more of a parable. However, because, and like I shared last week, there's so many things that were historically, we're able to kind of verify and see through archaeology and actual relationship between a prophet named Jonah and the city of Nineveh, something happened. Something pretty powerful happened that infiltrated into that ancient culture of Nineveh through someone named Jonah. So, up to you. Both perspectives are valid, whether you go literal history or whether you throw in some parable. But Jonah chapter 2 falls in with some great songwriting, some great poetry that has to be up there. And I don't know where you would rank it on the old-time charts, but remember how Mary, after she hears how God has chosen her to carry Jesus, writes that beautiful song in Luke 1. And so these great songs or poems and prayers that were written after a specific event in the life of a person or in the life of even a nation. Deborah in Judges 5. This one gets a little violent, but it's like the first heavy metal song. So Deborah, who's in charge, who's in the lead, it's kind of rare, but a female judge, leader of the nation of Israel back in the Judges before there was the monarchy that started with Saul and went off to David and Solomon. The judges, these were guys like Gideon and Samson. Deborah was one of them. And so Deborah is successful and victorious in this battle and part of the battle, and it makes its way. It's one of the verses of the song is about how this gal tricks the bad guy and he thinks that he's got a safe place to hide, and while he's sleeping she takes a big old tent peg spike and just right through the cranial. Anyway, it's a little violent. But Deborah writes a song about it. So anyway, that's a cool one. Moses, after the Israelites cross the Red Sea and make their narrow escape from Pharaoh and his army as the water fills the gap again, he writes his song. David, after his victory and escaping a close call and finally being free of King Saul, writes an amazing tribute to that experience in 2 Samuel. Hezekiah is one of the funny ones. Everybody remember that one in Isaiah 38? No, it's totally random, but now you'll never forget it. So Isaiah, the prophet who wrote the book of Isaiah, comes to King Hezekiah and says, "Look, pal, your number's up. God's going to take your life in a matter of days." And Hezekiah just freaks out. I mean, he just and he prays to God, begs him for mercy, and God in His grace gives him another 15 years. And so Hezekiah, I mean, he puts pen to paper and is inspired to write this song. So this is what's going on in Jonah chapter 2. A life changing big event happens. And I don't know how many of you guys are songwriters or story writers or storytellers, but when have you been most inspired to write and to kind of put to record, to record your thoughts and what's going on
in your life during a difficult, challenging time, or maybe a time when God has just revealed Himself in a way that's been so powerful, you just can't help but the creative juices come, and whether you're a journaler or you write in more of an artistic vein, Jonah is at the bottom. I mean, he's sinking fast into that watery grave when God sends that fish along and saves him. And this is how he responds. This is what he has to write about it. And this passage joins some of the elite biblical poetry. From inside the fish, Jonah prayed to the Lord his God, and he said, "In my distress I called to the Lord, and he answered me. From deep in the realm of the dead I called for help, and you listened to my cry. You hurled me into the depths, into the very heart of the seas, and the currents swirled about me. All your waves and breakers swept over me. I said, 'I've been banished from your sight, yet I will look again toward your holy temple.' The engulfing waters threatened me. The deep surrounded me. Seaweed was wrapped around my head. To the roots of the mountains I sank down. The earth beneath barred me in forever. But you, Lord my God, brought my life up from the pit. When my life was ebbing away, I remembered you, Lord, and my prayer rose to you, to your holy temple. Those who cling to worthless idols turn away from God's love for them. But I, with shouts of grateful praise, will sacrifice to you. What I have vowed, I will make good. I will say, salvation comes from the Lord." So here is Jonah, thinking all was over for him. Everything went cold and dark. And then all of a sudden, he was engulfed in safety and security. And he praises God from inside the great fish. And I don't know the experiences, but that's what we're going to kind of dig into a little bit today, is our personal life story. And I don't know where all of you've been, but I want to encourage you today to really think in detail about your history with God and the journey He's brought you through. As we kind of go through this journey with Jonah together, we see this experience here inspires him now to finally go in the right direction and take God's message to a people that he never wanted to encounter in the first place. But now, because of what God has done for him, because he's experienced that saving grace, that salvation, that miracle, when God extends himself into our lives and brings safety and security and hope to us when otherwise we're engulfed in darkness and despair. We've all got a story to tell. And so, it's kind of funny that, after that beautiful poetry, and then we got kind of this contrast with this graphic, and then the fish puked Jonah up on the shore. And so, but covered in whale puke, Jonah trudged his way now the 500 miles to Nineveh to bring them a message that now he's inspired to bring because he has felt God's presence in his life and God's care over him. And sometimes, Jonah was walking with God a long time. And some of us have been in a relationship with God maybe since we were kids. Some of us, maybe it's pretty new. Some of us, maybe we're still kind of checking things out. But we all have a story to tell. And when we finally let God in and we experience His goodness and His grace, we're now in a place where now we're finally motivated because of what God has done for us to extend that message to others. But a lot of times, we simply can't appreciate God's goodness until we've gone through some hard times. But sometimes those hard times are just a little much to even want to think and talk about, but it's necessary.
Because that's when we really see God's grace at work. And we all have a God-sized story to share. And so what I thought would be a really valuable experience for us to do today is to really start to learn how to, if you've never done this before, piece together your story. And so, and again, no matter where you have been on your spiritual trek, on your spiritual arc with God, we all share this in common. We all have a story. And even if we've known God and we've been in a relationship with Him since we were little kids, we've all zigged and zagged. And so, if you haven't, I'm so happy for you. And that is an incredible story right there of God's faithfulness to you. It's probably because you've had parents and grandparents praying you through those obstacles in life and young adulthood and early adulthood and all those kinds of things when things can get challenging. But we all have bumps in the road and times when we felt very far from God because we wanted to do our own thing. We've tried to live life without God. Then that time when God just brought us back to Him or brought us to Him, maybe for the first time when our life intersected with God and where things finally clicked and that spiritual light bulb went on, and it hasn't been the same since because we don't want to go back. We don't want to go back to how things were before. And now we've got this history of life with God. And so we all have this incredible story that first needs to be heard and told to us. We need to know our own story well enough to just appreciate God more in our life. And then it's just a kind of an automatic motivator and just makes it a little bit easier now to share with those around us our story when we have the chance to bring it up. And so let's talk a little bit about life without God. And so for those of you that can remember that, maybe that was recent, maybe it was a while ago, or maybe, you know, however, something to kind of try to dig up in our thoughts and in our hearts is trying to go back and ask these questions. Well, what did you believe about yourself and the purpose of your life? And I know, and just in talking with some of you about this time in your life, it felt kind of purposeless and lost. And so how did you feel? How did you feel about your sense of who you were and the sense of the direction of your life? Another question to ask is, what were your views, if any, of God, of Christianity, of church? Were those meaningful to you? Maybe some of us were kind of forced into experiencing some of that at an early age, and we were turned off by it. You know, and that kind of carried a negative connotation with us for a long time. It's like, well, church was boring. I didn't get it. I had to dress up. I don't want to go. The music, the guy, never. You know, it's like it was just, you know, all those things. You know, for me, it's just, why crafts? You know, I've just never been, it just seemed like you had to be good at crafts in church. I've just never been a craft guy. I couldn't stand, I just wanted to go outside and play. And so for me, church, it's always, you know, they do a wonderful job and with the, you know, the crafts, you know, but I've always, you know, in our kids' ministry, but I'm always kind of saying, you know, make sure they're having fun and playing a lot of games in there too, because some of the kids just aren't crafty, and then they look at me and go, you know, pretty much they're all pretty good with that. So, well, maybe that's me. But I'm always wanting to make sure, and that's why it's so great having Denise and Sarah in there. It's fun, and our kids have fun there, because the last thing, you know, church needs to be fun. It needs to be uplifting. It needs to be like if Jesus was here, because Jesus is here with us, and it's an encouragement. And so, but what were your views? Was God the scary judge, this intimidating father that was all wrath with and no gentility to him? Was Christianity just, you know, did it just not make any sense to you? Or was it something you were curious about? What was it? How did you feel? These are all your answers. This is what's so fun about this. This is your story.
And just so you know, don't just relax. Don't worry about taking notes. The stuff's always going to show up on the website, every week. And so you can always go back to it there to be reminded of these things if you want to journal in a little more detail. But what were some of the painful experiences in your life back then? Or if you're going through this search now, what are some of them now? And how did you deal with the tough stuff when God wasn't there? Can you remember how you dealt with that when you weren't seeking God closely in your life? And what did that feel like? What questions did you have about life or faith? And now you might still be struggling about, people come to me and they've got questions about the faith, about theology and things like that. And I always kind of feel bad because it's like, that's a great question. But I've got three more that are going to make that question really harder for you. And it's like, because I'm still... it's like, how in the world, can a God, anybody taking a look through, a telescope plate? How this universe that's so big, it's just mind-boggling. How could a God, my six-year-old just nailed me with this one. And when I told her, something came up about who created the world. I said, and I told her, well, some people think it just happened on its own. And she goes, oh, that's crazy. Of course, God made it. But then she kind of quiets down and she goes, but who made God? And well, that's the kicker. And you're six, and it's like, that's, yeah, so that's one I just can't help you with it because that's what's one of the things that makes God God. He's not made. He's just always been. And that's how my mind works. I've kind of got a skeptical, analytical mind, and it makes it a challenge for me to just, take things on faith like a kid does. Well, then even kids aren't, So I guess that's my my DNA going back to that. But it's important that we kind of reflect and go back to, what were your questions? Have some of those been answered now? What questions do you still have? But what was life? Can you remember life without God? Can you remember when your life intersected with God? And that change came about, and that whether it was through a moment or an event, with Jonah, obviously Jonah grew up feeling very close to God and a sense of community in his nation and Israel, having God at their head, yet still needed to process things, and God had many lessons for him. And this experience of near death and drowning and this miraculous resuscitation through the whale and being saved and restored changed his life forever. And it's an amazing symbol and reminder for all of us that we've got to go through some sort of experience like that when we can realize that without God, I'm as good as dead. I'm as good as dead without God in my life. And so let's look at what our intersections tell us about our story. Can you remember what circumstances led you to your decision to accept Jesus as your Lord and Savior? Was it a simple thing being a 5-year-old kid and your cousin's family is staying with you and your cousin in the hallway at your parents' house? I still remember the exact spot where my parents still live. Asked me if I knew that Jesus loved me and wanted me to be with him forever in heaven. And I said, well, I've heard my mom and my grandma talk about that, but I guess. And she goes, have you ever prayed to accept Jesus into your heart? Because that way you always know for sure. And I said, no. She goes, do you want to do that right now? And I said, yes. And I've never forgotten that moment. Through all the zigs and zags, through all the wanting to do things my way and rebel against God's leading in my life, I can still go back to that moment and have that security that no matter what,
Jesus is never going to let go of me. He's going to keep corralling me as much as I zig and zag to get me back on track. Who else was involved? You know, my cousin Molly. I'll never forget that sweet experience with her. So, for you, was it a friend? Was it a family member? Was it a leader at your church? Maybe a Sunday school teacher? So many people, it's their grandmother. You know, my grandmother was super inspirational and had a huge impact in my walk with God and my sense of God in my life. What was your experience like? I described mine a little bit there. Was it just a private prayer? Just maybe you and God? Maybe it was one-on-one with somebody else? Maybe part of a small group? Something related to church? Maybe some sort of special event? Or maybe something it's not on this list. Again, this is your story. And I really want to challenge each of you to really dig up those details and string them together and know your history, your personal story with God, and go deep into that. Because it's a prized possession to have. And the story continues to be written as we speak. But we have to all know our own story before we can do a good job of bringing somebody else into it. Or at least it helps us with that motivation, because we know what God's done for us. And we want to see that happen for everyone else around us. And then to describe any changes in your feelings or thoughts toward life during that time. Now, is there a sense of hope, of security that just wasn't there before? A sense of God's presence, a sense of now purpose, that I've been created specifically by the God of this enormous universe that's got his fingerprints in such detail in every little thing. He's paid that much attention to me. What now is life all about? It's not what I thought it was before. Now I'm part of a plan that I had no idea. I thought I was just sort of a random, happening in this cold universe. But now I'm part of a plan of a loving God that has something in mind specifically for me. There's this renewed sense of purpose in our lives. And then this is a really fun one. Boy, and I would just love to quiz everybody here. Who did you tell about it? And how did they respond? Because I remember going to my grandma that night and telling her about that little conversation with my cousin. And I can still remember the giggle in her, in her voice, and just how happy she was that her favorite grandson still try to hold that over. I remember this actually happened recently between me and my brother. I'm like, Grandma used to tell me that I was her favorite. Well, dude, she used to tell me the same thing. In fact, she used to tell me that she told you that. And so, anyway, so it's kind of a little burst my bubble a little bit. But maybe it was your experience, and I've known several people that when they did tell their closest loved ones about this amazing experience that they had, and just the sense now of belonging and security and salvation in their soul, it was a negative response. It's like, how could you? Or, seriously? You fell for that? You need that? Oh, that crutch? Some of us maybe have had a negative response. And so maybe we've kind of recoiled. We don't want to tell a lot of people about this. We've kind of hidden that, or maybe haven't lived it out to the fullest because we were hurt that way. And so, whatever it is, it's your story. And it's a gem. And the world needs to hear it. I just want you to know I want to hear it. It's my favorite kinds of stories. And I love a lot of different stories. There's nothing I love more than hearing how God
swept you off your feet and intersected His grace in your life. I mean, to me, it's just the most fascinating, original, creative work in human history, you know, that we ever get to hear. And so, how has your life intersected with God? I mean, I couldn't fit any more bullet points on that. Then how has life been since then? Has it just been all roses and just perfectly sweet, right? Because once you're in a relationship with God, all the problems just fade away and you're on cloud nine for the rest of your life, right? Have there been some blessings? Hopefully there's been some blessings, but the reality is there's still tons of challenges and even painful experiences. What have been the challenges and painful experiences and blessings? And writing those down and cataloging those and then filtering those now with your new worldview, your new outlook on life, because God is with you and in you. How do you now deal with those kinds of experiences now? Good writing, Rick. Okay. Just pick one now. In that sense. But how do you now respond to the pain and disappointment and the difficult, confusing circumstances that life brings along? Because God doesn't magically remove those when we're in a relationship with Him. But He does insert something new. His Spirit in our life now powers and equips us to deal in a different way. Now, are we crushed when our personal hopes and ambitions aren't seen through the way that we might want to craft and shape them? Or now, because our identity is something so much more, and so much more important than our jobs or our relationships or our stuff, our homes, our cars, our all that kind of, or all those kinds of things now, because when our identity is caught up in being sons and daughters of the living God, all right, well, that didn't go the way I thought it would because God must have something better for me in mind. Or there's a lesson in this that before I didn't want to hear. I just wanted to fight. I just wanted to fight to get my way. Now I don't need my way. Because of what Jesus did on the cross and didn't have His way, I don't ask for my way. I ask for God's will. I've got a whole new definition of success and prosperity because of my identity in Christ. I'm just like Him. And, you know, a few months ago, that was one of the things we really dove in deep with. We're called to be sons and daughters of the living God. That's our true identity. That changes everything. How has God shown Himself to be active in your life? Are you now able to forgive? Are you now able to let go of grudges and resentment? Are you now able to worship, to give of yourself in a way that before you would just never let yourself do that? How has God used you to serve or bless others? Now this is kind of fun. What questions have been answered for you? And then what questions do you still have? And it's okay to still have a ton of questions, by the way. And it's okay to still wrestle with God, and it's okay to still disagree and all those things. What's great about it is you're in a relationship with God, and then you've got somebody to wrestle with and talk through, and He wants to hear all those emotions. That's what's great about being best friends with the God of the universe. Nothing's off limits. So still ask your questions. All the questions don't just magically go away and every loop is closed. But the main one is resolved of who you really are and who's taking care of you, what your eternal destiny is all about. You don't need to question that anymore. You can just check that box.
I want to share with you an example of a story that has all these pieces together. And well, while this one's kind of dramatic, and we might think, well, mine's not that dramatic. Yes, it is. Yes, it is. But it's just another way to see how God can do anything in the life of anyone. And we all love that old hymn, and we sing it here, and we're going to sing it today, Amazing Grace. We sing it old school, and we sing it new school, and it's just one of our favorites. But you might not know the story behind the author of Amazing Grace and how it got written. Reverend John Newton, boy, he wasn't very nothing reverend about him in his early life, but he had a hard upbringing. And at one point, he was, before he was actually in the slave business, he was actually, you know, literally sold off and was belonged to a, you know, worked on a slave ship and basically was treated like a slave. But an English sailor back in the Royal Navy and later a captain of slave ships, Newton became ordained eventually in his older, older life as an Anglican minister who served over two decades and was known for writing, he was a great preacher and also known for writing hymns, most notably Amazing Grace. And so when we sing that song, Amazing Grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me, capital wretch on this guy. Okay? I mean, and we've all, you know, and what's amazing when we come to that place and experiencing God's grace, we're able to see how we're not much more than that when we're apart from God. But here was somebody that was so engulfed in the African slave trade, worked his way up to captaining ships, but one night on a rocky storm, much like the storm that rocked Jonah's boat, he finally, you know, felt some chinks in his spiritual armor and prayed out to God, God, if you save my life, I will follow you. And miraculously, the waves, I mean, this is the story that he told, shifted, and the cargo slid across the Florida to block the hole that was allowing all the water to come in, and miraculously the ship didn't sink, and he lived to tell the story. But here's the thing about John Newton. His life didn't change overnight. He stayed in that slave business for quite a few years after. And it's one of his biggest regrets. He writes about it quite a bit. And that's why even though he knew he had this relationship with God, now this was still his business. And it was okay. Perfectly legal. Nobody was judging him. But he just had this turmoil inside for years that ate him up. He couldn't let go because there's money to be made. But eventually, because he stayed in that relationship with God and God just worked on his soul and turned him around, He left that business to such a point that he did a full 180, pursued theological studies, and was ordained as a minister. And it was in those years, and he just, again, he writes quite a bit on his deepest regret that he didn't change his life sooner. But in those years is when he penned the song that Ryan's going to lead us in here in just a minute. And he also worked hard all the way till his deathbed to be part of the abolition of the African slave trade in Britain that finally came about in the early 1800s. And so that's his story. And I just want you to know, you know, from when we sing Amazing Grace together, you know, it's just another one of those songs
songs. Just like Jonah's song and Mary's song and Deborah's song that is that didn't just come out of somebody's imagination. It happened because of real life events of God intersecting someone's life with His grace and His goodness to give hope. And not just for that person, not just for me and you, but there's a purpose that you have your story. Not just to hold on to it and enjoy it ourselves, but for it to be told. But first we've got to know it. First we've got to know the story. Reflect on it. Write it down. So then we can bring that story into the lives of others. And if Newton ever penned those words, I mean, what we'd be missing? What would we be missing? Jonah never put that down. If so many of these experiences were left untold. But that's how God wants to bring His message. Through all these wonderful custom handcrafted stories that are sitting right here to be told and shared to the world out there that needs to hear that story in order to really get God's goodness and His relentless chase after our lives and souls. And so Ryan, come on up and lead us in a time of worship as we reflect on our own stories that God has built into our lives. And so as we reflect on how we fit into His overall story, and coming to His table always reminds us that central theme of human history, what Jesus has done for all of us through His work on the cross and His saving grace and ensuring our salvation. We just simply put our faith in Him. So, Lord Jesus, we do. We thank You for this incredible story that You're writing and how each of us gets to be a chapter in this amazing volume. And so, Lord, I just pray for everyone here that they would take the time and take advantage of the opportunity to really dig in deep to their own story. Know how special it is. No story will ever be told like that one. And Lord, let these stories reach the ears of those who are still living without You, so that they can be inspired and touched and brought closer to You. Lord, intersect our stories with theirs. We pray in Your name. Amen.